Hello, I'm Lee Normudu. Welcome to Health Chat. It is a medical approach that makes it possible for physicians to treat patients remotely. Telemedicine. The medical approach allows healthcare professionals to evaluate, diagnose, and treat patients at a distance using telecommunications technology. According to the World Health Organization, telemedicine has great potential to address some of the challenges faced by both developed and developing countries in providing accessible, cost-effective, high-quality healthcare services. Experts say the use of telemedicine has been slow to catch on in parts of the world, but the COVID-19 pandemic's social distancing requirements is accelerating its use worldwide. For more on telehealth, I spoke with Yaya Mbawa, founder and CEO of Zensi, a telehealth platform working in Africa. Take a listen.
Mr. Yaya Mbawa, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm actually really honored to be on the show.
Great to have you. Listen, you are one of the experts when it comes to telemedicine on the African continent, and you've been working in the field for quite a while. Help us better understand telemedicine and what it is. How would you describe it?
Well, telemedicine, you know, simply put, is the practice of medicine from a distance. In other words, it's the mechanism that allows a patient to connect with a medical professional remotely for medical advice. And so typically it happens via, you know, a smartphone or a computer or a tablet. And the communication style can be via text, audio, or video. And so basically situations where the patient and the physician are not physically at the same location.
What services are recommended for telemedicine? Because clearly they cannot do everything, right? Like surgeries cannot be done.
Well, it's, you know, telemedicine is suitable for, you know, urgent care situations, you know, minor issues, you know, things like, you know, you have a child at home and in the middle of the night, you know, you feel like you need to take the child to the doctor, maybe to the hospital, to the emergency room. And so, you know, and it's something that requires maybe just a few minutes of the doctor's time. And in those situations, there's no need for a physical examination of the patient. So minor illnesses, like fever, you know, asthma, chronic disease, monitoring of patients, those types of situations can be handled via telemedicine. However, so if you are in a situation that requires the patient to come to the hospital for a physical examination, telemedicine clearly cannot really do the job. So there are some limitations to it, but the technology is evolving. Nowadays, you have wearable devices that actually capture, you know, patients' vital signs. For example, I have an Apple Watch here, which actually has an ECG monitor. It can measure, you know, your blood pressure and things like that, and still, you know, allows you to have a, you know, sort of a meaningful consultation with the doctor without being physically present with the doctor.
So there are many components, especially technology is a major part of it, if not the main part, and then you have the experts. Now, talk to us about how readily available it is on the continent of Africa, because some people are still not very familiar with this.
Well, you know, telemedicine is not new in Africa. You know, wherever you go in Africa, you would find some form of telemedicine project, but it's been largely pilot projects, small, you know, islands of experiments that have been sort of deployed, but not at scale. But, you know, I think recently you've seen in the recent years some countries really taking telemedicine as an essential part of their healthcare sort of strategy. A great example is Rwanda, which actually has a nationwide telemedicine service today. And more countries are looking at telemedicine as essential in strengthening their healthcare system.
How so? How can this strengthen African health systems as a whole?
Well, you know, in the case of you know, many African countries where half, you know, mostly half the population lives in rural areas, right? So what happens is that in many, you know, health facilities in rural areas, there's no resident doctor, right? And so you have an increase in chronic diseases like diabetes, you know, hypertension, cardiovascular diseases. Typically what happens in those areas is that You know, they largely go untreated because there's no local physician for to take care of those patients. So now with telemedicine, essentially what you can do is provide the means for residents in those remote locations via telemedicine system to connect with a physician or a specialist remotely in larger cities. You know, in that way, you can actually provide access to quality care, specialty care to populations which otherwise don't have access. So that's actually in itself has the potential to impact the healthcare system at large. So that's how telemedicine can really play a meaningful role in strengthening the African healthcare system.
It's an interesting concept, and the fact that you talk about the rural area as being one of the targets for this technology, it's very fascinating, because a lot of times, you know, in some villages, some rural areas, there is no electricity, for example. Also, the access to technology may not be there, and it's not just an African issue. When you go to rural areas around the world, these challenges are there. So how do you tackle this?
I think as an individual, maybe as a private player, it's difficult to change those things because these are systemic issues. And I think that has to come from the top. You know, the company, the country has to have some, you know, governance in defining sort of a new strategy for ensuring that, you know, all areas of the country have the necessary resources, and that includes electricity, that includes communication systems. You know, I think with mobile networks that are now sort of quite pervasive across Africa, even in some villages nowadays, you have access to mobile phones. And, you know, how do you sort of tap into that, you know, infrastructure to establish connection between patients in rural areas with doctors in the cities? And that's sort of a strategy that any country has to put in place to ensure that, you know, no one is left behind, so to speak.
So presently, until there is electricity everywhere, what are you doing with your company? Who is able to access this?
So I think we have to address it step by step. First, we have to make sure that we provide our solution in places where there's connectivity, adequate access to electricity as well. So what we do here in Cote d'Ivoire, for example, we work with the Ministry of Health to provide them with our telemedicine platform that will be used in public hospitals. So right now we're targeting mostly public hospitals in major cities where there's a crisis already, you know, in Abidjan, in Cote d'Ivoire, in Wake, in Sokro, where there's a true problem accessing, you know, medical professionals. And in those cities, you have the existence of electricity and communication is actually quite good already. And so we have to tackle things step by step. And obviously, as the country looks at expanding electricity coverage, communication systems coverage across the country, the services will become available everywhere. That's our approach. You know, it's more of a pragmatic approach that we're having at the moment.
In a country like the United States, telemedicine use has been increasing over the past decades. Now, what we're seeing with the COVID-19 pandemic, there's even a bigger push. Have you seen a change in this regard with regards to the African continent?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, obviously, with the pandemic, everyone is actually recommended to stay at home as much as possible. And also, you know, as hospitals welcome patients with COVID-19, it's not always a good idea for patients to go to the hospitals because they might be exposed to the virus. The same thing applies to doctors. Here we have cases of doctors, succumbing to COVID-19. And as you may know, in Africa, there's a dire shortage of physicians. So Africa cannot afford to lose physicians, to COVID-19. So how telehealth or telemedicine helps in this process is that it enables patients to stay home and be connected with doctors in the comfort of their home and also in the safety of their home, and so that the doctors can determine whether or not they should come to the hospital so based on their situation. So in some cases, they might not need to come to the hospital and, you know, avoid being exposed to the virus. And the doctors also will be protected that way. So that's actually how COVID-19 can be addressed using telemedicine. But the impact, I think, going forward is, well, obviously, it's because of necessity that telehealth is being used. But over time, people will actually understand the comfort that comes with using telehealth from home, from your place of work, to have access to doctors. So I think that the consequence of this is that people will really realize the value of being able to use technology to connect with doctors wherever you are.
So you see telemedicine as also a way to address the disparities in healthcare and access to healthcare.
Absolutely, absolutely. And not just that. I think that, you know, clearly with some of the deployments we've done in some African countries like Zimbabwe, we've seen how telemedicine really has improved outcomes in healthcare access by now making medical professionals available to populations that otherwise don't. So you will solve the problem of access to care using, you know, telemedicine for rural areas. And even in cities, you know, here in Africa, you still have problems with people accessing care because there's a shortage of physicians. Many African doctors, trained African doctors, leave the continent to go to Europe, to go to North America for better conditions. So as a result, there's a shortage of physicians, which creates, you know, a real crisis in accessing care and quality care. And what we think with telehealth is that it's going to actually make it possible for patients anywhere in Africa to be able to have access to doctors anywhere around the world, when you really think about it. In effect, we can actually reverse the brain drain, the effect of the brain drain, of African doctors to North America, to Western Europe, by providing them with a bridge to be able to treat patients in their own countries or on the continent. So we can actually make it such that, you know, the problem of access, both in rural areas and in urban areas, will be addressed through technology.
Great. And finally, your company's mission is to transform how people access healthcare in Africa, across the continent. How so?
So we provide a downloadable smartphone app, which is accessible to the population. If you have a cell phone, you should be able to have access to a doctor. Through an application, our application, patients can actually have access to doctors, you know, set up a consultation with them regardless of the location and be able to be advised medically when they have an issue. So that's in a nutshell what we do in making sure that we provide the means for people, the population, to connect with doctors whenever they need one.
What sort of impact have you seen?
So far, we have been rolling out our solution in Côte d'Ivoire with the Ministry of Health. And it's essentially used as a digital front door for the public health system, where patients can actually talk to doctors, and doctors can determine whether or not they should come to the hospital, or they can be treated remotely. And that's actually showing to be we've rolled it out across three Abidjan hospitals already, and we've seen how it's actually sort of improved the volume of patients going to hospitals. And in some cases, patients at the hospital in waiting rooms, rather than waiting for hours to see a doctor, they can actually use their smartphone and connect with the doctor, whether they're at the hospital or not. So it's really improving or optimizing the use of medical resources.
Yaya Mbawa, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
That was Yaya Mbawa, founder and CEO of Zensi. It is time now for a short break. When we return, we'll have more on telemedicine and other health news. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Health Chat. If you are just joining us on today's show, we take a look at telemedicine. Now, here in the United States, outside of rural areas and some medical practices, telemedicine has been slow to catch on. But the COVID-19 pandemic's social distancing requirement has accelerated the use of telemedicine worldwide. Doctors and patients alike are learning that a lot can be accomplished remotely. Michelle Quinn, take a look.
It's called telemedicine. Since the start of the coronavirus outbreak, doctors and patients are meeting less in person and more on the phone or over video. The goal is twofold: protect patients by keeping them out of emergency rooms and doctor's offices, reduce in-person visits so the health system isn't overwhelmed. Dr. Edward Lee now sees more than 20 patients a day this way in Sacramento, California.
But nowadays, with COVID-19, we're seeing it as a necessity. Patients are being kept safe.
The telemedicine revolution, which has been resisted by some doctors, patients, and regulators, is now becoming a reality. Advocates say doctors using video, email, and other technologies increase people's access to medical care by making visits more convenient. You can live in a rural area and consult with an expert without having to drive for hours. Skeptics say a video call shouldn't replace in-person visits, where a doctor can perform diagnostic tests and get the best sense of a person's overall health. Regulators in the U.S. recently gave telemedicine a temporary boost by making it easier for healthcare providers to bill for these virtual visits and giving the green light that using Skype and other technology doesn't violate patient privacy laws. Doctors say that from afar, they can do a lot, such as monitor patients who take their own blood pressure and test their own blood sugar, for example. They weigh whether a patient's medical issue can be handled remotely or in person.
Looking at a rash, looking at a spot on the arm, that's perfect for telehealth because we have the video capabilities. Feeling a bump, whether it's soft or hard, it's a little bit harder, although we can have the patients describe the consistency of something like that. If I needed to do an injection, if I needed to do a minor procedure, I'm not going to be able to do that over video or a phone. And so in those situations where there are urgent needs, we would bring the patient in to see us in the office.
Hospitals use robots like these so that an expert hundreds of miles away can visit with a patient and medical staff over a course of treatment, said Dr. Kathleen Jordan with St. Francis Memorial Hospital in San Francisco.
This one we use for telestroke, which is a much more in-depth neuro exam. And in that one, we would have someone at the bedside with the patient. The neurologist is controlling the camera as well as the angle and really looking at things.
Of course, there are many situations when in-person meetings are best. A cancer diagnosis, an end-of-life discussion.
You know, the video is quite good. We can see each other. We can look at facial expressions. And really develop that connection through there. But it's hard to substitute the ability to hold a patient's hand when talking about these type of difficult situations, to give them a hug and to pat them on the back.
As we continue to practice social distancing, telemedicine likely will change the relationship between doctors and patients. Michelle Quinn, VOA News, Oakland, California.
We travel now to India, where the divide between India's urban and rural healthcare is stark. Big cities boast of highly qualified doctors, while most rural areas lack adequate health infrastructure. To bridge the gap with the help of modern technology, the northern state of Himachal Pradesh has launched a telemedicine program in two remote areas, Anjana Pashrisha reports on how residents in one of them, Bharmore, are benefiting.
In the remote Himalayan hamlet of Bharmore in Himachal Pradesh, there was no orthopedic to examine Ajay Singh's persistent backache. So the local medical center arranged an online consultation with a specialist in the southern city of Chennai. He prescribed a line of treatment that local staff monitors. Like him, scores access highly qualified doctors hundreds of kilometers away through a telemedicine program launched last November. The constant irritation in Sanjay Sharma's throat is improving since he started medication prescribed after a virtual consultation with a specialist.
We have this facility close to our house. I would have had to have traveled at least 10 to 15 hours to a city to consult a doctor. I have saved both time and money.
Although most of rural India struggles with inadequate health facilities, availing healthcare in these Himalayan villages has been specially challenging. The tiny population and bad weather make it hard to attract medical staff. The nearest big city is 400 kilometers away.
Most of the time of the year, these are cut off from the rest of the world because of the heavy snowfall and blockage of the passes connecting these locations to the rest of the district and the state. So people had no option but to get whatever treatment is available there, because either you have to airlift people, which at times gets very difficult.
Now local staff in two places, Bhadmor and Pongi, has been trained to conduct tests such as ultrasounds and electrocardiograms. Specialists in city hospitals access the reports online. Satellite technology helps overcome the poor connectivity in these areas.
We have been able to cater to about 3,000 consultations in OPD consultations, and more than 60 tele-emergencies have been stabilized at these two locations in last since the inception of the program.
For this resident, a cardiologist's diagnosis of his brother's heart condition was timely. He needed quick attention.
The doctors told us he has a heart problem, a blockage. We went to Shimla City, where doctors put in a stent. That solved the problem.
The telemedicine program is also helping women whose health problems in rural areas often get neglected.
Doctors here told me to consult a specialist for my persisting headaches. It was diagnosed as migraines. The medicines I have been taking for the past month are helping.
Fears that these difficult roads will cut them off from medical care have been eased for residents in this Himalayan hamlet. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
Now to Africa, where Nigerian doctors are on a nationwide strike over an unpaid COVID-19 hazard allowances and inadequate protective equipment during the pandemic. Other health workers' groups and associations are threatening to join the strike, which began Monday. Since the country's first case of the coronavirus, more than 1,000 Nigerian healthcare workers have become infected with COVID-19. Timothy Obiezu has this report from Abuja.
It's been 4 months since frontline nurse Emma Salome Julius left his wife and three-month-old baby to join a team of health workers responding to the coronavirus at an isolation center in Abuja. Due to fear and stigma attached to the pandemic, Julius did not reveal to family the nature of the job he had taken. Weeks later, he contracted the virus and feared for his life.
I had fever, I had cough, I had difficulty in breathing, I had diarrhea, I had lost appetite. I could not eat for close to 2 weeks. By the time I was discharged and I checked my weight, I had shedded over close to 15 kilograms.
Julius was paid 1 month's wages for his service and debated whether to keep the job. Then 2 weeks ago, he and many of his colleagues were dismissed after an uprising over unpaid allowances at his isolation center. Since then, Julius has been in quarantine without pay in this hotel room as he waits until it's safe to reunite with his family.
We feel we were used, infected, and abandoned.
For weeks, healthcare employees have been demanding hazard pay and adequate protective equipment for workers on the COVID-19 front lines. An estimated 1,000 Nigerian health workers have contracted the virus. Officials addressed medics who protested along the streets of Abuja late August.
We are fighting this war with you, and we will not deny you of all your allowances and your benefits. Among the taxi states and Abuja, we will be paying you regularly based on our own agreed allowances.
But the National Association of Resident Doctors, NARD, says the government has been insensitive to health workers' issues.
I think that the government is not serious and resident doctors have been patient enough, and we're giving them enough time to come up with solutions.
Strikes by medics are common in the West African nation, where healthcare system has been underfunded for years. But experts worry that the strike at this time could affect Nigeria's ability to respond effectively to the coronavirus pandemic. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja.
Somali health authorities say the number of maternal checkups and childhood vaccinations have plunged during the pandemic, as many people fear catching COVID-19 at clinics and hospitals. Healthcare workers worry the lack of medical care for pregnant women and children could result in a wave of common diseases that take more victims than COVID-19. Mohammed Sheikh Noor reports from Mogadishu.
Amina Mustafa and her family were displaced by the drought 3 years ago and have since been living in a Mogadishu relief camp. Her three-week-old baby needed vaccinations, but she was too afraid of catching COVID-19 to go to a clinic. Mustafa says it's a common fear among mothers in the camp.
I couldn't go to a healthcare facility because of this COVID-19. It is spreading across the entire world. I fear for my health and that of my child. We are scared of contracting the virus at a health facility. My child and I have missed important prenatal and postnatal vaccinations, all because of this COVID-19.
Somali health workers are alarmed by the sharp decline in child immunizations and visitors to the clinics during the pandemic. Volunteers like Saadia Ahmed are going door to door, urging families to vaccinate their children, but it is no easy task.
Every mother, whether pregnant or lactating, says they are not ready to come to the health facility for vaccination. Most fear contracting COVID-19.
If left unaddressed, Somalia could see a jump in respiratory infections, measles, and malnutrition, says the International Committee of the Red Cross, ICRC. The ICRC says visitors to the Somali Red Crescent clinics by children under 5 and pregnant women dropped by more than half in the first 7 months of this year compared to 2019. Flooding around Mogadishu in recent months also risks waterborne disease, warns the ICRC. The floods are further straining Somalia's pandemic stretch health system and only adding to the worries of mothers like Mustafa. Mohammed Sheikh Noor for VOA News, Mogadishu.
That's it for this edition of Health Chat. We thank our guest, Yaya Mbawa, founder and CEO of Zensis. For the latest news and coverage on the coronavirus pandemic, visit voanews.com. Check us out at facebook.com/VOA Health Chat, and let's keep the conversation going. Thank you all for joining us, and special thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Lee Nohmudu in Washington, with producer Dan Brown. Until next time, take care, stay safe, and wash your hands more frequently, and strive to make every day a healthy day.